When do the sale prices end?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. Holiday buying was not too shabby over the weekend. The National Retail Federation says total spending was $41.2 billion, about the same as last year. But here's the problem if you're a retailer. Once you have trained your customers to expect those big discounts, how do you get that genie back into the bottle? Well, here's Marketplace's Rachel Dornhelm.
The challenge for stores now is to break customers of their addiction to sale prices, what some are calling discount detox.
But it's a very long road, I think, in terms of really getting that consumer to really want to buy full price again.
Tom Chin tracks the retail industry for the Telsey Advisory Group. He says last year, merchants had to resort to unplanned discounts to clear merchandise. How to resurrect full-price retail? NPD Group analyst Marshall Cohen says stores are gradually phasing out discounts.
So it's really about getting the consumer to recognize, yes, there's a discount on it, but the discount isn't going to be bigger the longer you wait.
But Cohen says adjusting prices isn't the only way to get consumers to fork over more money.
It also comes down to making creative and interesting and innovative product. That's also one of the things that the retailers are trying to do, and that means that they're going to have to actually get more aggressive with innovation.
Cohen points to Apple as a company that keeps unveiling new products and services and offering few markdowns. Tom Chin says in the apparel world, the model looks like H&M's partnership with high-end designers. That means limited edition clothing that draws consumers willing to pay full price. I'm Rachel Dornhelm for Marketplace.
And retailers are hoping for more shopping today on what they like to call Cyber Monday. European stock markets are mostly lower this morning. Banks there are believed to be heavily exposed to those debt problems in Dubai. Today, a Dubai finance official said the Emirates government does not guarantee that debt. Asian markets rebounded earlier today. Wall Street reacted on Friday to the Dubai debt crisis, with the Dow falling 154 points and closing at 10,309. The U.S. economy might be improving, but there are still a lot of people who cannot make their mortgage payments. The administration is reportedly meeting with big lenders today, trying to force them to work harder to renegotiate those loans. Marketplace's Elisa Roth reports from New York.
Today's meeting is all about pushing the big mortgage lenders to do more to lower the monthly payments for borrowers who are having a rough time keeping up. Under the current program, the government gives lenders cash incentives to renegotiate monthly payments. There's a trial period where the borrower makes the lower payments for a while. And then if they can get the right documentation and everything else goes well, then the lenders should make those new payments permanent. But what seems to be happening instead is that a lot of borrowers go through the trial period, and then that's it. The government is going to ask lenders for daily updates, as well as force them to come up with detailed plans for modifying more loans. And it also stopped paying out the cash incentives until the reduced payments become permanent. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Bank of America, which has begun a 10-year, $1.5 trillion investment in low to moderate income communities, and is distributed by American Public Media. For information about underwriting this or other APM programs such as Marketplace Money, visit AmericanPublicMedia.org.
Today in Geneva, trade ministers from the World Trade Organization are meeting, as they did 10 years ago today in Seattle. That WTO conference, of course, turned into the so-called Battle of Seattle after police clashed with demonstrators who were opposing globalization. The Seattle WTO meeting was meant to launch a new era of global free trade, but as Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman tells us, it hasn't quite worked out that way.
Dave King used to be a union carpenter. His wife, Lori, is a retired teacher. They're still active labor organizers. 10 years ago today, they were piling out of buses onto the streets of Seattle.
And people were screaming and cheering, you know, United Food and Commercial Workers, carpenters who are holding up organize or die banners.
Now, 10 years after the Battle of Seattle, we're standing on the deck of their modest home in Portland, Oregon. It overlooks the main shipping channel to the Columbia River and the Pacific. Over the past decade, the Kings have seen ever more imports come up the river, cars, shoes, computers, toys, and they've seen jobs flow out the other way. Several years ago, an entire dry dock for repairing cargo vessels was shipped to the Caribbean.
They found cheaper labor in the Bahamas. The good jobs were exported along with the dry dock.
That kind of outsourcing to cheaper, less regulated countries has accelerated since Seattle, but global free trade has been stopped in its tracks, says Lori King.
It really put the whole issue of globalization, corporate globalization, on the map, and that's why the WTO has been dead in the water for all these years.
Not exactly, says Jeffrey Schott. He's a trade expert with the Peterson Institute for International Economics.
What really stopped the talks was not the demonstrations outside in the streets, but the divisions inside the conference room, particularly between developed and developing countries.
Schott was in Seattle 10 years ago, on the other side of the barricades. He says since then, disagreements over tariffs and agricultural subsidies have persisted, and that's hobbled follow-up negotiations, the so-called Doha Round, to establish a global free trade regime under the WTO.
That's not a great record to go a decade without bearing any fruit. And so you've seen proliferation of trade agreements either bilaterally or in regional groupings.
Schott says the anti-globalization movement that made such a ruckus in Seattle is partly to blame for giving global free trade a bad name in the U.S. So is outsourcing of jobs and economic fears due to the lingering recession. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
And finally, that lingering recession even shows up in the new Twilight film topping the box office. You'll notice the werewolves in the movie aren't wearing much, just basically shorts. Director Chris Weitz says that's because the beasts are feeling the effects of this downturn.
They can't afford T-shirts in the number that they would need, given the amount of times they turn into wolves at short notice and their clothes burst. Really, you know, they have to go to Walmart every 10 minutes.
Exactly. And werewolves do not care for fluorescent lighting. This is Marketplace Morning Report. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.